You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Staying informed in today's market feels like trying to drink from a fire hose, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
You're just bombarded with news, opinions, predictions. It's tough to know what truly matters for your investments.
It really is. Analysis paralysis is a real thing with all that information overload.
So how do you cut through the noise? How do you make, you know, objective decisions?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? A disciplined, rule-based approach can really help cut through that overwhelm.
And that brings us right to the heart of this deep dive, technical trading.
Exactly.
We're going to explore the core principles of making trading decisions based purely on, well, the language of the market itself, price data, volume, and for futures traders, open interest.
And our guide is Perry Jake Hoffman's book, A Short Course in Technical Trading. It really lays out a solid framework.
It does. It's about interpreting those market signals.
Yeah.
Using objective sort of predetermined roles, deciphering the story the trading activity is telling.
Right, through patterns, statistical tendencies, what the price itself is doing.
Think of this as your express ticket, maybe, to understanding the key ideas behind technical trading. We're distilling Kaufman's insights for you.
And it's important to remember this is distinct from fundamental analysis.
Crucial distinction, yeah. Fundamentals look at, like, the intrinsic value of a company, right? Is it a good company?
Exactly. What is this asset worth? Technical trading asks a different question.
Which is?
What is the market signaling about where the price is likely headed? It's all about price action.
Okay, let's unpack this. One of the very first things Kaufman hits on is that timing is everything. Seems obvious, but...
But the market's so dynamic, it's constantly changing. Kaufman points out how much things have evolved. Faster tech, more savvy traders, more competition, electronic exchanges. It's a different ballgame than it used to be.
And he uses some pretty stark examples, right? Like the mid-90s bull market.
Oh, yeah. Unprecedented trends, he calls them. You look at the charts in the book, like figure 1.1A for the S&P 500.
Yeah, it gained like 50% between 95 and 97.
And Microsoft, figure 1.1B, even crazier, something like 260% up in roughly the same period.
Wow. Just incredible upward momentum.
It seemed like you couldn't lose back then, the book notes. But that changed fast.
Right. Then he flips the script. Figure 1.2 shows the S&P losing half its value between 2000 and 2001.
A brutal drop. And Microsoft went volatile, sideways, then a sharp fall in April 2000. It shows how quickly things can reverse.
So technical trading is basically trying to navigate these swings, the trends, the reversals, using rules.
Precisely. Finding potential opportunities within that constant motion based on objective signals, not just gut feeling.
And the market anticipates things, right? Kaufman talks about that buy the rumor, sell the fact idea.
Yeah, that's a huge point. The market often prices in expected news before it happens.
So when the news actually breaks,
it might not react like you'd think, or it might even reverse if the actual news doesn't quite meet the whispered expectations.
He uses the unemployment rate example. A lower rate seems good, but if the market expected an even lower rate,
prices could still fall. It's about the difference between reality and expectation.
And reactions aren't always instant either, like the Fed lowering interest rates.
Right. The book notes that can take time to filter through the economy and the markets. Sometimes multiple cuts are needed before you see a big response.
So timing involves understanding these potential delays, too.
It all reinforces that technical analysis focuses on what the market is doing, because that price action supposedly reflects everything. The news, the rumors, the expectations, the whole collective psychology.
Okay, so markets are dynamic. Timing's key. Let's get into actually finding direction. Charting the trend, that famous saying.
The trend is your friend. A cornerstone, really.
Trend following means what exactly? Yeah. Buying up trends, selling down trends?
Pretty much. You're betting that a trend, once established, will likely continue for a while. You align your trades with that dominant direction.
What actually creates these trends? Kaufman mentions government policy.
Yeah, things like interest rate changes, they impact borrowing, business activity, inflation, that ripples through markets.
And expectations, too, like a hot summer boosting utility stocks.
Exactly. Or a gloomy economic outlook hitting travel stocks. These collective expectations can become self-fulfilling to some extent, driving price movements.
But trends always look so obvious in hindsight, don't they? That S&P chart, figure 2.1, you look back and it's clear. But living through it.
That's the challenge, identifying the turn in real time. And that's where trend lines come in.
Right. Drawing lines on the chart.
Yeah.
Connecting the lows in an uptrend or the highs in a downtrend.
Kaufman shows this with Cisco in figure 2.6, clear examples of major up and down trend lines.
And there are intermediate trend lines, too, for shorter moves within the main trend.
Yep. And different ways to trade them. Some aggressive traders might jump in on an intraday break of the line,
while conservative ones wait for the price to actually close beyond the trend line.
Exactly. The closing price is often seen as a stronger confirmation, filtering out some of that midday noise.
And these lines aren't set in stone, are they? The Amazon example, figure 2.11, shows you have to keep redrawing them as new highs or lows form.
It's a constant process. The market evolves, your lines have to evolve with it.
Kaufman makes a really important point about trend following, though. Expect lots of small losses.
Yes, that's crucial. Most individual trades will likely be small losers. The profit comes from a few big winners that capture a significant chunk of a major trend.
So you need those big wins to outweigh all the little cuts.
Absolutely. It's about positive expectancy over many trades, even with a lower win rate. Cut losses quickly, let winners run.
And one last practical tip on trend lines. Don't place orders exactly at old highs or lows because of gaps.
Right. Prices can sometimes jump over those levels. Figure 3.2 suggests placing orders slightly ahead of the breakout point to improve your chances of getting filled if it takes off quickly.
Smart. Okay, so that's visual charting. Now let's talk calculating the trend, using numbers.
Moving beyond just drawing lines. We need systematic, quantifiable methods, and moving averages are fundamental here.
They smooth out the price data, right? Make the underlying direction clearer.
Exactly. Like smoothing a bumpy road to see the overall slope filters out the short-term noise.
But just like chart patterns can give false signals, these calculated trends can too.
Oh, for sure. No method is perfect. Kaufman stresses that. The key is understanding the tool's limits, maybe using multiple tools for confirmation.
He shows an example with an 80-day moving average on Microsoft, figure 4.4. What were the results like?
Interesting results. Over 10 years, 88 trades. But only around 40% were profitable.
40%? That sounds low.
It might seem low, yeah. But this is typical for many trend systems. The important part is how much you win versus how much you lose.
Ah, right. Figure 4.5 shows a sample. The winning trades were held longer.
Much longer. And the average win, like $3.32, was significantly bigger than the average loss of $1.22, which they cut pretty fast.
So again, it's that principle. Small losses, big wins.
That's the core idea of trend following in a nutshell. You need the discipline to stick with it.
The book also mentions exponential smoothing or percentage smoothing.
Yeah, another way to smooth data. The difference is it gives more weight to the most recent prices.
So it reacts quicker than a simple moving average.
Generally, yes. Figure 4.6 compares them visually. It can be more responsive, which might mean more signals, maybe some quicker exits, but also potentially more whipsaws.
What about breakout rules like end day highs or lows?
That's another systematic approach. Figure 4.9 shows these signals on Microsoft. You buy when price hits a new, say, 20-day high, or sell on a new 20-day low.
How do those compare to moving averages performance-wise?
Well, figure 4.11 suggests breakout and slope methods often have larger profits per trade.
But maybe more risk. Wider swings before the signal.
Potentially, yes. Whereas moving averages and smoothing, as figure 4.13 shows, tend to generate more trades overall, possibly with tighter risk on each one. Trade-offs.
Okay, lots of tools. But Kaufman then brings it back to practicalities in the trading game.
Super important section. Things like understanding order types, market, limit, stop.
OCO, cancel, replace.
Yeah, tables 5.1 and 5.2 cover those.
Knowing how to actually place the trade correctly is basic but vital.
You need the right tool for the job. Market order for speed, limit order for price control, stop order for risk management.
He also suggests comparing calculated trends like moving averages with hand-drawn trend lines.
Yeah, a nice confirmation technique. Consider trading only when both your math and your visual analysis agree. Adds a layer of confidence.
And the number one rule seems to be
risk management. Always, always place a stop-loss order when you enter a trade. It's your safety net. Non-negotiable, really.
Got it. Okay, let's build on trend lines with channels and bands, creating boundaries.
Right. Take a trend line, draw a parallel line on the other side of the price action, and you have a channel. Figure 6.1 shows one on the S&P.
And the idea is to buy near the bottom line, sell near the top.
That's the general concept, using the channel lines as potential support and resistance zones.
But don't be too rigid about it, right? Markets can break out of channels.
Absolutely. Kaufman suggests maybe thinking in zones like the bottom 25% is a potential buy zone, the top 25% a potential sell zone within the channel.
And he warns again about taking profits too early in a trend.
Yes. It's tempting to lock in a small gain, but trend following needs those big winners to pay for the inevitable small losses. Cutting winners short kills the strategy.
What about Bollinger Bands? They sound different from fixed channels.
They are. Instead of fixed percentage bands around a moving average, like in figure 6.4, Bollinger Bands adjust their width based on volatility.
So they get wider when the market's choppy, narrower when it's calm.
Exactly. Figure 6.8 shows this. The bands provide a relative measure of high or low prices compared to recent action. Touching the bands might suggest a move is overextended short term.
Interesting. And regression bands are another type?
Briefly mentioned, yeah, based on statistical regression showing potential deviations from the average trend. More mathematical.
Okay, shifting gears slightly to event-driven trends, trading only when something specific happens.
Right, breakout systems are the classic example here. As figure 7.2 shows, price can just jump around for ages with no signal.
Until it breaks a previous high or low.
Precisely. The trade is triggered by that specific event, the breakout. The idea is that a significant event likely caused it.
And point and figure charting. That looks really different. It ignores time.
Completely ignores time. It only tracks price movements of a certain size. X's for up moves, O's for down moves, new columns only on reversals. Figure 7.7 and 7.8 show examples for Amazon and ExxonMobil.
What's the benefit of that?
It filters out a lot of the minor noise and focuses purely on significant price swings, potentially highlighting major trend changes more clearly. Swing trading also focuses on these larger swings.
Okay, with all these potential trades, let's talk risk again. Controlling the risk of a trade using two moving averages.
Yeah, one common technique is a dual moving average system, a longer term one for the main trend and a shorter term faster one.
How does that help control risk? Figure 8.2 uses Amazon.
The idea is maybe you buy only when both are trending up, but you might exit or sell when the faster one turns down, even if the long term trend is still up.
Ah, so a quicker exit signal potentially, tighter stops.
Potentially, yes. Compared to just relying on the slower, long-term average, it aims for earlier warnings.
And again, stop losses are emphasized. Always.
Always. And Kaufman advises beginners against day trading. Too fast, too complex.
Better to evaluate after the market closes and place orders for the next day.
Gives you time to think calmly, objectively. Day trading is intense. Also, diversify. Don't put too much capital, maybe 10, 20%, into a single trade.
And remember, trading isn't investing. Shorter time frame.
Much shorter, maybe 2-5 days, maybe a few weeks. It's about capturing price moves, taking profits, cutting losses based on the technical signals, not buy and hold.
Okay, let's zoom right in. One-day chart patterns and reversals. Clues from a single day's action.
Exactly, short-term signals. Like breakaway gaps, shown in figure 9.1. Big price jumps that break out of a pattern, often at support or resistance.
Signaling a potential new trend.
Often. Yes. Then there are exhaustion gaps, signaling the end of a move and runaway gaps, which confirm and accelerate an existing trend. Figure 9.3 shows gaps on the euro.
What about spikes?
Sharp, quick moves that often vanish just as fast, not always reliable signals on their own.
And wide-ranging days, outside days, inside days. Figure 9.8 on Tycho shows these.
Wide days show big volatility. Outside days, new high and new low engulfing the previous day, can sometimes signal reversals. Inside days, ranges within the previous day, suggest consolidation, indecision.
And the overall market, like the S&P and program trading, can influence these daily patterns too, right?
Definitely. Individual stocks often get pulled along by the broader index movements, especially intraday.
Then there are continuation patterns, signs the current trend is likely to keep going.
Exactly. Patterns that form during a trend pause. Flags and pennants are the classic ones, figure 10.1.
Like little consolidations after a sharp move.
Right. Usually tight ranges, then they often break out in the direction of the original trend. Wedges are similar, often showing declining volatility before the breakout.
Okay, if those are continuation, what about top and bottom formations? Signs the trend might be ending.
These signal potential reversals. They usually take longer to form than the one-day patterns, like V-tops and bottoms.
Sharp reversals. Figures 11.1 and 11.2 show Amazon and crude oil.
Yeah, suggesting prices moved too far, too fast, and snapped back. Then you have rounded tops and bottoms, which are much more gradual reversals. Figure 11.8 shows a rounded bottom in crude.
Island reversals. Sounds intriguing.
That's where a gap leaves a chunk of trading days isolated from the main trend, can signal a reversal.
And head and shoulders. Everyone's heard of those.
Classic reversal pattern for tops and inverse head and shoulders for bottoms. They even have ways to project potential price targets based on the pattern size.
Wedges can be reversal patterns too, if they're large and volatility is shrinking.
Yes, like the Japanese yen example in figure 11.10, a large declining wedge can signal a potential bottom or top. Recognizing these can give you an early warning of a trend change.
Okay, so prices move, they form patterns,
But
they rarely go straight up or down, right? Retracements, reversals, yeah. Fibonacci numbers, and Ghana?
Absolutely. Prices breathe, they move, pull back, move again. Understanding potential retracement levels is key.
How far might they pull back? Kaufman mentions common levels.
Traders watch different things, simple fractions like half, a third, a quarter. And Fibonacci ratios are very popular, especially 0.618 and 0.382, or 62% and 38%. Figure 12.5 shows some S&P examples.
Prices often stall at these levels.
They seem to, yeah. And also, interestingly, sometimes at simple round numbers. Psychology, perhaps?
Fibonacci gets a lot of attention. Those numbers appear in Nature and Art, too.
They do. It's fascinating. And in markets, many traders use the 62% and 38% retracement levels to anticipate where a pullback might stop or where a move might extend to.
So watching those levels for potential turns. Okay, what about the fuel behind the moves? Volume, breadth, and open interest. Volume confirms the price.
That's the general rule. Increasing volume on a move up or down suggests conviction, strengthens the trend signal. Declining volume as prices rise or fall can be a warning sign the trend might be losing steam.
Figure 13.1 on Amazon shows volume picking up before big price moves.
Good example. Volume spikes, big jumps compared to the average can also flag important moments.
The book mentions indicators like on-balance volume, OBV, and volume accumulator.
Yeah, ways to mathematically link volume to price changes. Figures 13.6 through 13.9 show some comparisons and examples, like around 9/11. Whether they add much beyond just watching price and raw volume is debated.
And market breadth, like the advanced decline line.
That measures participation. Are lots of stocks moving with the index or just a few? A rising AD line confirms a healthy uptrend. A falling one suggests underlying weakness.
Okay, let's talk speed, momentum, and MACD. Momentum is just how fast prices are changing.
Basically, yes, the rate of change. It can be used as a trend indicator itself. Above zero often means uptrend, below zero downtrend. Figure 14.1 shows different calculation periods.
And MACD.
Yeah.
Moving average convergence. Divergence? Sounds complicated.
It's derived from moving averages, specifically exponential ones. It smooths things out. The book breaks down the calculation. You get the MACD line and the signal line. Figure 14.4 shows it.
What's the key signal for MACD?
Divergence.
That's a big one. When price makes a new high, but MACD fails to make a new high, or vice versa for lows, that's divergence. Figure 14.5 has an example. It can be an early warning that the trend might be losing steam or ready to reverse.
Kaufman notes that increased day trading has changed patterns, needing faster tools.
Yeah, markets evolve. faster reactions, maybe shorter trends sometimes. Adaptability is key.
Which leads nicely into overbought, oversold indicators, and double smoothing, identifying when things have gone too far, too fast.
Exactly. Overbought means prices might have risen too much, too quickly, and could be due for a pullback. Oversold is the opposite for falling prices. How do you measure that? Statistics?
Yeah.
Sentiment?
Both. Statistical oscillators measure how the current price compares to its recent range. Sentiment looks at what traders are thinking. There's the contrary opinion idea, too.
That if everyone is bullish, it might actually be a sell signal.
That's the theory. Extreme confidence can sometimes mark a top. The bullish consensus indicator tries to track that.
What are the common technical indicators for this? Stochastic, RSI.
Those are two of the most popular. The stochastic oscillator, per 10, KCM per 70, and the relative strength index, RSI. Figures 15.10 and 15.11 show them. They oscillate usually between 0 and 100, hitting high levels when potentially overbought, low levels when potentially oversold.
Gold and double smoothing, just smoothing the data even more.
Yeah, applying smoothing techniques, again, to already smoothed data, like momentum. Figure 15.14 shows an example, tries to filter out even more noise, give clearer signals, but might lag more.
Important to remember, these aren't perfect timing tools, right? Best used with other signals.
Absolutely. Confirmation is always good. Use them as alerts, not definitive buy-sell triggers on their own.
Okay, we've identified potential trades. Now, managing your entry and exit. How to actually get in and out? Different ways to enter.
Sure. You could put your whole position on at once. Simple, but you risk getting a bad price if it moves against you immediately.
Or average in. Buy in smaller pieces.
Right. Try to get a better average price, but you might miss part of the move if it takes off right away. Pros and cons. Key is deciding your total position size before you start.
What about adding to winners? Trend followers like to do that.
Kaufman gives some common sense rules. Add smaller amounts than the initial trade. Make sure there's a new valid signal. Adjust your stop so the new piece doesn't risk the profit on the old one. Maybe don't add more than twice.
And exiting. Profit targets and stop losses again.
Crucial. Have a plan for both. Where will you take profit? Where will you cut your loss? And you might need to adjust these based on volatility.
Using that true range idea to measure daily volatility.
Yeah, if volatility picks up, you might need wider stops and maybe bigger profit targets. Figure 17.4 gives some rules for trading high volatility days.
The main takeaway seems to be, have a plan for entry A and D exit before you trade.
Absolutely critical. And minimize losses, especially in shocks. Don't hold losers too long. Trade smaller sizes.
Let's expand on that with volatility and portfolio management. Volatility is that expected daily range.
Exactly. And it's vital for position sizing. The book has a table showing how many shares you'd trade of different stocks to keep your daily risk similar, even if the stocks have different prices or volatilities.
So equal dollar amounts isn't necessarily equal risk.
Not at all. If one stock is way more volatile than another, the volatile one carries more risk per dollar invested.
Diversification helps reduce risk, but...
But correlations can spike during crises. Things that usually move independently can suddenly all move together, often down. So diversification isn't a magic bullet, especially when you need it most. Hedging is mentioned as a more complex way to offset risk.
Key is managing position size based on individual stock volatility.
That's a core part of sophisticated risk management.
Okay, finally, let's touch on the granddaddy of technical analysis, Dow theory, long-term perspective.
It's very long-term. Developed by Charles Dow, focused on identifying major market trends using the main Dow Jones averages, industrials, transports, initially utilities too.
It has six main ideas, right? Averages discount everything.
Yes, meaning market prices reflect all known information, except maybe huge surprises like natural disasters.
Three types of trends. Primary, secondary, minor.
Primary is the main long-term tide, months to years. Secondary are corrections against that tide, weeks to months. Minor are short-term ripples, days to weeks.
Primary trends have three phases: accumulation, participation, distribution.
For a bull market, yes. Smart money accumulates early, the public joins in, then smart money distributes near the top. Reverse for bear markets.
And the principle of confirmation: two averages must agree.
Crucial. For a major trend signal to be valid, both the industrials and transports, for instance, must be moving in the same direction, confirming each other.
Volume goes with the trend, and trends persist until a clear reversal.
Those are the other key tenets. Volume should expand in the direction of the primary trend, and a trend is assumed to be intact until there's definitive proof it has reversed. Figure 18.1 shows the indices.
Can Dow theory apply to broader indexes like the S&P 500?
Kaufman discusses applying the principles, yes. Figure 18.7 looks at that. And figure 18.8 reinforces that individual stocks often move with the broader market, highlighting the importance of that overall market context.
So even though it's old, the core ideas about confirmation and trend phases are still relevant.
Many technicians believe so. It provides a valuable long-term framework for market psychology.
Wow. Okay, we have definitely covered a huge amount of ground in this deep dive, drawing from Perry Kaufman's A Short Course in Technical Trading.
We really have, from timing and trends to patterns, volume, momentum, risk management. It's a comprehensive look at the technical approach.
It really offers a systematic, objective way to look at markets, focusing on price and volume, using rules, looking for patterns.
And like Kaufman repeats, no system's perfect, no guarantees. But understanding these principles gives you valuable tools.
Tools for navigating trends, managing risk, making perhaps more informed decisions based on what the market itself seems to be indicating.
It's about using the market's own data, its own behavior, rather than just relying on news or somebody's opinion.
So for you listening, maybe think about how these concepts could fit into your own approach. Could technical tools help you spot opportunities or manage risk better?
And maybe a final thought to ponder. Given how much markets have changed, the speed, the technology, the algorithms, how do these core technical principles, some dating back decades or more, still hold up today?
That is definitely something to think about. How does this classic approach adapt and stay relevant in today's super fast, complex financial world?